The second part of our time together, this second presentation, came from a conversation we had as a planning team. And we said we want to do a deeper dive in terms of the CRC connection. And so what I'd like to do is invite Coonrad Bugelink to come up. And he was the one who kind of pushed us into this. So thank you, Rick, for building this second presentation to help us unravel this a little bit. So Coonrad, if you want to share a little bit why we're doing this.
Because I'm a nerd. That's why. I really don't know. I struggle with some dyslexia, and even statistics is difficult for me, but for some reason I'm actually attracted to statistics. Probably goes back to my university course selection, which was all in criminal justice and sociology, and so there's a lot of research involved in that, and so that's carried over into youth ministry. Often very fascinated with research coming out of the United States, wishing there was more research about youth ministry trends and youth ministry realities in Canada. Reginald Bibby did some work, and then when Hemorrhaging Faith came out, which is the research project prior to this, I was just really excited to see what a Canadian picture and what some of the Canadian flavor looked like. I'm a passionate pastor and leader in the Christian Reformed Church, and I've often thought about, what about us? What about the Christian Reformed Church? Are there some things that we need to wake up and pay attention to? And for this particular project, Renegotiating Faith, Sid Hielema and Ron sent the link for the youth ministry part of the survey to us. And I'm a youth ministry champion here in BC Southeast, and so I was like, man, I'm going to hit these youth pastors hard and ministry workers. I want them to get these surveys done, and I want them to report back to me in a system of accountability that they did it. So I know that there's CRC research in this, and so I'm just asking Rick to share some of that so we could maybe begin to think about how does this impact us as a Christian Reformed Church as well. So,
in my first presentation, I mentioned that we did two surveys. And so the first survey was with young adults themselves, and the second was with ministry workers. And most of my first presentation focused on the data from the young adult surveys. And so now, because I've been asked to give a presentation on that, I'm going to talk about the ministry workers survey. So we collected this data in 2018, and the way that we did it is we asked our denominational partners, like the CRC, to help us to recruit participation with youth ministry workers. And so we had 1,570 responses, of which 71 of them were from Christian Reformed ministry workers. And just a word of caution, 71 is still a pretty small sample size, so just be careful about how you use the data, right? There should be some caution with that. So we're going to be comparing the CRC numbers alongside the rest of the sample. And so on each side your slide, you're going to see two pieces of data. On the left-hand side, you're going to see the CRC data. On the right-hand side, you're going to see the data for everyone else who completed the survey. And I've broken this presentation down into four parts. By the way, this is going to be about half the length of the first one. So if anybody's sort of nervous about seeing a lot of stats, it won't last that long. It won't be too painful. We're going to do some discussion about who's in the sample. Then we're going to talk about a plan to connect, not the plan to protect, but a plan to connect, whether we have that. We're going to look at mentoring and then professional development and networking. So first thing, we're going to look at who's in the sample. So this first slide, we're looking at the gender of those who responded to the survey. And you can see on the slide behind me, again, the CRC data is in the circle, the donut on the left-hand side. Everybody else is on the right. In the blue, you've got the percent that were male. In the red is the percent that were female. And you can see that there's not a lot of differences between the CRC sample and the others. I should say that I'm not going to make a whole lot of interpretative comments about what these data. There'll be a few slides that I'll make some pointed comments, but this is just by way of comparison, because what I was specifically asked is, how is the CRC different than the rest of the sample? In terms of age, when we're looking at generation, we wanted to look at, you know, how old were youth ministry workers. And so we've grouped here the respondents by sociological generation. And so if we start at the top of the donut here, right here, the first one here is the silent generation. These are the people that were born before the end of the First or Second World War. And then in blue, you've got late boomers. Early boomers, late boomers. The light green here is Gen X. And then the red here are those that are Gen Y, or sometimes called millennials. So the exact breaks for these different generations varies. But again, you can the only thing that I'll sort of notice here is that the CRC ministry workers who filled out the survey tended to be just a little bit older than the rest of the sample. You've got far more that are here in red that are Gen Y. And some of that is because, yes? And by the way, if you're interested in this, Ron DeVries has all of these slides, and he's happy to share them with you. So if you want to get these slides later on, just please contact Ron, and he'll get them to you. When we look at the years of experience of those that are in ministry, again, starting at the top of the donut here, in green, we have those with 0 to 5 years experience. In yellow, those with 6 to 10. Red, those with 11 to 15 years experience. Light blue, 16 to 20. And then dark blue, 20 years of experience or more. And you can see that there's not a lot of difference here in terms of the distribution of the years of experience of those in ministry. If we look at the primary ministry setting, and this is how it breaks down. And there's a little bit of difference here, but again, starting at the top of the donut here, in green we have those that whose primary ministry setting is a church, that's a local church. A school setting is in red, campus ministry is in purple, community ministry is in yellow, camp ministry is in blue, and then administration is in pink and others in black. I just want to note that we didn't have any CRC respondents who indicated they were involved in a community ministry or a camping ministry, and there was a smaller share involved in campus ministry. So this would be the group here that's involved in community ministry, and in terms of camping ministry, it would be this blue here. So that doesn't mean that there aren't people in CRC, but not the ones that participated in our sample. I have some additional slides in a deck that's going to be available through Ron that looks at the intersection of some of these demographic variables, but I thought that the slides were a little bit too complex to just sort of whip by you. And so if you're interested in that, get the slides from Ron and you can study them when you have more time to digest them. Next, we got them. There they are. That's why I didn't show them to you, right? And there's another one. And there's another one, and now we're past them, and you can digest them later on. All right, we're talking about a plan to connect. In the last presentation, we saw the importance of making connections with young adults with next Christian communities. And because of this, we wanted to ask a number of questions with ministry workers about whether they're planning to make those connections. And so that's what we're going to look at right now. And the most basic question that you could have when you're talking about making connections with young adults is, do you actually plan to do it, right? Because we tend to do what we plan to do. And so this first slide here, we asked their level of agreement with, my ministry organization has a plan for connecting young adults who move to Christian ministries in new communities. And again, we've got the CRC data on the left, the other data on the right. And starting at the top here, we've got red, strongly agree. This is moderately agree. This here is moderately disagree, strongly disagree. And this is don't know or not applicable. Let me just say a few words about this particular scale. So we've got an agreement scale here. Just a few words about desirability bias. Anybody know what desirability bias is when sociologists talk about it? Desirability bias is the tendency of people when you ask them a survey question to give you the answer that they think you want to hear. And they do that so that you think well of them. And there's the tendency, I think, with some of these questions that people want to give us the answer that we want to hear. We've also found that when we use this particular scale, that it's an uneven scale, and this is what I mean. Sometimes people will ask you, say you go to the doctor and you're having pain, they'll say, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your pain like now? And what they're kind of assuming is that the step up from 2 to 3 is the same as the step up from 7 to 8, right? That it's an even scale. That's actually not the way that these scales tend to work when you talk about agreement, especially where there's desirability bias in the background. For example, in the past when we've asked questions about whether people believe, for example, the Bible is the Word of God, those that moderately agree that the Bible is the Word of God tend to not read the Bible very much. But those that strongly agree that the Bible is the Word of God are the ones that will tend to actually read the Bible. So if you're comparing questions about what people think about the Bible and then putting that alongside whether they actually read it, the first few steps are like this, a little, but the last step is a big one that goes up. And I mention that because here we have another question where there's desirability bias because, you know, we want our people to have a plan and they want us to think that they have a plan. So it may be that those that are just moderately agree are, they might be exaggerating a little bit about the robustness of their plan is what I'm saying. You would have to do more interview work to know for sure. But this means two things, that if we look at this data, even with those that strongly agree and moderately agree that they have a plan for connecting young adults, that there's not a lot of churches that or ministries that have that plan, and that's the bad news. The good news is that there's lots of room for improvement there. All right. So the next slide here, when youth and young adults, they come into our ministries and they come and go, and like with a lot of ministries, out of sight, out of mind. And when people leave, one of the things we found when we talked with youth ministry workers is they just didn't think about the people that weren't showing up regularly to their ministries. And so what we wanted to do is get a sense of how youth ministry workers track with the youth and young adults who leave their ministries. And you can see we're using the same scale here again. So the question was, when youth or young adults leave my ministry, I try to find out where they have gone. And this, again, this is strongly agree, and this is moderately agree. And so this is fairly encouraging that they have a sense of where they've gone. They're a little bit less likely to say yes in a Christian Reform context than the rest of the sample, but still largely the same. Next, we wanted to get a little more specific. Knowing where they have gone, we want to know, do you have a sense of responsibility for them until they've been connected to another ministry? Because we found that it's so important that once they leave your context, that they get connected to another. And so here's the next slide. When a young adult leaves my ministry because of a move, my responsibility for them does not end until I've connected them with another Christian ministry. Again, this is the same scale. Now, I'm going to flip back and forth with the last question. Remember, the last question is, do you know where they've gone? This one is, do you have responsibility for them? And this is know where they've gone, this is responsibility. And you see that there's less that feel they have a responsibility for them after they've gone. They may know where they've gone, but there's a lower number think that they have some responsibility to help get them connected. Now, we're asking this of ministry workers, and ministry workers aren't the only ones that have responsibility for our youth and young adults, right? But it does beg the question that if they don't have the responsibility for making the connections, then who in your church does? Next thing we wanted to look at was after major life transitions, more specifically, are you following up with people? And we looked at this in two ways, when the people are starting a new job and when they're starting school. These are both major life transitions, and we know that getting them connected to a next Christian community within the first 4 weeks of a move or a move to school is a critical threshold. And so ask questions about how long it was after they started a new job or school before someone followed up to just see how they're doing spiritually. So this first one was, when youth or young adults connected to my ministry, start a new job. There's a spelling mistake in there, but anyway, we'll get that. I intentionally connect with them to see how they're doing spiritually. And This is the first week after the start date. This is within 2 weeks. This is within 4 weeks. Within 4 months, not at all. And this is the group that thinks that it's not applicable. And you can see that most people are not making those connections after the start of a new job. Now, the next slide is going to be the same thing with the start of school. When youth and young adults connected to my ministry are entering university or college for the first time, I intentionally connect with them to see how they're doing spiritually. And I'm just going to flip back and forth and just pay attention to the red, yellow, and green, yellow, and red. And this is work, and this is school. This is work, this is school. And you can see that, especially among the CRC group, that they're more likely to follow up with somebody who has started a new job than somebody who started into a new school. Now, some of that may be because when you start a new job, you're not necessarily moving out of your congregation, right? And it may be a follow-up of the idea that out of sight, out of mind, they're not in the congregation, so it's not my responsibility to follow up on them. But we know that this follow-up is critical. It's just so important. And so the question that I think that we should be asking here is, if we're not following up, then who is? Yes. No, we didn't. Yeah, and you know, we actually did a third survey with young adults that attended a Christian university. And it is true that the people that go on to Christian universities generally land better with mentors. Just the environment encourages faith formation, and the outcomes in terms of faith persistence are generally better. But I don't think that we should take it for granted that that's going to happen. You know, what we found was just so significant is that they need to make a connection with at least one other person. And it's not here's their contact information, it's more like, let's sit down and have coffee with them and let you meet them. I've heard of some people that if they know a young adult is going off to a university, they find a staff worker with a Christian ministry and they just drive there together and they have lunch together. And they make that connection. And that makes it just so much easier. Or if you know of people in a community where your young adults are going and there's someone from your church, will they just meet them and help make that connection? I actually had a call just this week. There's a parent of someone that I know, and his daughter was at the University of Ottawa having a really hard time in first year, at this point in first year, making connections. And he knew that my son went there, and not trying to set them up or anything, right? But could he make connections for her with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, where he knew he was part of the campus group? But that's so, and what he was saying is that she was too shy to make those connections herself, which just kind of is an illustration of the phenomena that we're finding here. And don't assume that people were going to know somebody at the campus. It's just so important to make that connection for them. But you're right, Christian universities generally do a better job with this, but that's part of their mission to do that. Next, we'll look at mentoring. And we talked in the first presentation about the importance of mentoring, and these slides are going to kind of look at some questions we asked about the barriers to mentoring as ministry workers saw it. And part of mentoring is having spiritual conversations. And, you know, it's other conversations as well, but that's certainly part of it. And in our interviews, some of the ministry workers told us that they were actually uncomfortable having these conversations with young adults. They didn't know how to do it, or they felt inadequate doing it. So we wanted to know if that was kind of a common experience with ministry workers, or whether the people we talked to were just outliers. And again, this is same agreement scale, where in red you've got strongly agree, orange here is moderately agree, and then a gray, light gray, moderately disagree, and then dark gray, strongly disagree. And the question is, I find it difficult to have one-on-one spiritual conversations with youth or young adults. And you can see that, you know, happily, that most people either strongly or moderately disagree, but then there's still a group here, and these are our ministry workers, that say, you know, it's kind of a hard thing for me to have those kinds of spiritual conversations. And you know, if we think about our desirability bias and the way that works with these questions, it may be that even those that are saying that they kind of moderately disagree with these questions are still kind of struggling with being comfortable having those kinds of conversations as well. you know, we're all crunched for time, and we know that one-on-one mentoring relationships have the most impact in people's lives, but they're also very costly in terms of time. You know, it's actually easier from a time efficiency standpoint to plan a big group event than it is to plan a bunch of coffees. And so we asked ministry workers, it is difficult to find time when a ministry colleague refers a youth or young adult to me. And you can see that there's a significant group here that either strongly or moderately agree that it's difficult for them to find time to do that. And so a hard question is, why don't some of our youth or young adult ministry leaders feel that they have the time for what is arguably one of the core parts of their jobs? You know, what's competing with that priority to have those kinds of conversations? The next one is a similar question, but this time we're asking about the time to mentor those who are no longer an active part of their ministry. And so here the statement was, I do not have time to mentor youth or young adults who are no longer an active part of my ministry. And here you can see that this grows quite a bit. Here's strongly agree, this is moderately agree. And now it's over half say that they don't have time for that. But we found out in our research with young adults that having the continuity of connection was just so important. And so we're asking this of ministry workers, and you know, we can't scale them to be everybody. They can't be a mentor to everybody. So whether they don't have time or others don't have time, the question is, how do we structure our ministry so that somebody has the time to follow up with them? We asked another question. It is hard to find enough mentors for youth and young adults in my ministry who want mentors. And we're asking again for the level of agreement. You can see that most people either strongly or moderately agree that it's hard to find those mentors. Now, keep in mind, the wording of this question is just for the youth or young adults who want mentors. Not all of them want mentors. And so that's a smaller subset. And this having a hard... So the question is, how do we talk about mentors, and why is it so hard for us to find those mentors in our congregations? Now, keep in mind, the number of people have kind of taken me to task and said, you know, it's not about mentorship, it's about discipleship. And I think that Kunrai was talking about a preference for another term. And that's fine, you know, to some extent I used the language of mentors because that's what the literature used, and it became a kind of a more theologically neutral term than discipleship that may be loaded in some communities. But the fact of the matter is there still needs to be some kind of relationship that goes on. And if it's hard to find them, how are we describing it? Are people convinced that it's valuable? Like, do they understand why? I was having a lot of conversations recently with Ron as we had a chance to get to know each other, and just think about the nature of our communities are different, right? It used to be that 50 years ago that you were part of your community and these were your people and they were just always around, and the idea that you would have to work at meeting them to schedule that, well, that you didn't have to because they were just always there. And now we have people who are, you know, you may not see people from your church throughout the week unless you intentionally try to do that. And so there's all kinds of ways of thinking about how life is different now versus how life was different then, and trying to make people understand that the things that you took for granted maybe when you were younger are no longer available to young people unless you're intentional. Plan to protect. You know, it's a sad reality that too often, and we hear these reports way too often, vulnerable youth or other vulnerable people have experienced abuse in the church. And to address this, most churches have put in place plans to protect vulnerable persons, and you know, one example of those plans is the Plan to Protect program. But a key feature of most of these plans is that no adult is ever to be alone with a vulnerable person. But of course, this has consequences for one-on-one relationships, right? How do you do that? And several of our ministry experts that we interviewed told us that vulnerable person protection plans made it difficult or near impossible for them to do mentoring in the way that they wanted to do that. Now, as you can see, we asked them whether they thought that it made it difficult to have mentoring relationships here, and about a third of ministry workers either strongly agreed or moderately agreed that it made it difficult. Now, this doesn't mean that we shouldn't do these protection programs. We should, but we should also do the mentoring. But it's going to take more work and more creative solutions to figure out how to do that. Maybe it's not going to be one-on-one. Maybe it's going to be one-on-two or two-on-two or something like that. But it's going to be harder, but it's still very necessary. Next, we want to look at professional development and networking. So I take it as sort of a baseline thing that you can't network people with people you're not networked with. And so when we're thinking about young adults moving and connecting them into next Christian communities, if you don't know the people in the places where they're going, it's really hard for you to make an introduction for them. And so one of the ways that you can do that is by attending a youth or young adult ministry conference. And so we asked, did you attend a youth or young adult ministry professional development or networking conference in the last 12 months? And in blue is yes, in red is no. And you can see just a little over half said that they had attended a conference. Youth ministry conferences are one of the best places to connect with other youth ministry workers. And I think churches need to understand that that having your youth ministry workers attend is a strategic choice for the church. It's not just about the training, it's about the relationships, and it's about thinking about the wider kingdom of God. It's thinking beyond your local congregation and how are you going to equip your youth and young adult ministry workers to do the kind of networking that they need to do. This next one is, are you regularly connecting with a youth or young adult ministry network beyond your local ministry context? And we find that about two-thirds of them say, yes, they are. And this is important to make those connections both for networking and new ideas. But it's also a question that tries to get at the idea that does your church support and encourage you to think about ministry beyond your local context here? And I think that that's a really important thing for churches to support their youth and young adult ministry workers in doing. And finally, I intentionally cultivate relationships with youth and young adult ministry leaders in other cities so that I can make connections for young adults who leave my ministry because of a move. And this is, again, linked in with the planning question, right? You need to know people in other cities. And you need to intentionally find connections in other cities where you know that your youth generally are going to school or moving because of work. So this is a much shorter presentation. These are some of the data that we found. You can have this for comparison, and we'll be able to get this to you afterwards. Do you have any questions about this?